you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Wedding season is in full bloom, and if you've been wanting a straighter smile, look no further than Bite. Bite offers clear teeth aligners that help you transform your smile from the comfort of your home or wherever you'll be this time of year. Forget the endless trips to the dentist. Bite's clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered straight to your doorstep. Just take an impression mold of your mouth, preview your 3D smile, and order your all-day or at-night aligners. Bite also knows that wedding season is expensive enough as it is. Their aligners cost thousands less than braces. It's time to let your smile shine. Get started on your smile journey by visiting Bite.com and use code WONDERY at checkout to get your at-home impression kit for only $14.95. That's BYTE.com, code WONDERY, to get over 80% off your impression kit.
What follows may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
The world is full of stories. Stories of mysteries, of curiosities, of oddities. Join Kat and Jethro Gilligan Toth for the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected, as they lift the lid and cautiously peer inside the box of oddities.
So this ought to be fun. We got a message from Kyle, who actually lives in Thailand.
So cool.
Which is on our list of places we want to go and spend an extended period of time. We hear it's beautiful. Kyle says, what is something about the other person that you have never shared with anyone before? This is fun. One time, Kat ruined our coffee grinder by putting cheese in it.
I thought I could make like
Parmesan. Yeah.
Could make like a shredded cheese in that way, but it didn't. It just broke the grinder.
Yeah, we had to throw it away.
Yeah.
And our coffee tasted like feet for a long time.
Isn't accurate. We never used it after the cheese incident, which still is brought up to this day as the cheese incident.
Yeah, but this is the first time I've brought it up publicly.
I can't think of anything that I haven't told everyone about. Regarding you, it
really?
Just seems like something that I would do is just share it immediately.
Share it immediately, usually on TikTok.
I did TikTok the other day about how you had you didn't do something that I'd asked you to do, and you were like, "I'm really sorry, I can do it for you now." And I was like, "No, don't worry about it. Just try to pay attention to stuff." And so you wrote "pay attention to stuff" on the whiteboard so that you wouldn't forget.
Yeah, because
to pay attention to stuff.
The problem is, though, I keep forgetting to check the whiteboard.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Oh, boy.
It's just like I will put a bag of trash at the top of the stairs for you to take down when you're leaving. And you will move the trash out of your way to leave.
Boy, quickly we've gone from I don't have anything to share to several items.
Well, I know I've already shared those things.
Oh, okay.
Fair enough. Nothing new.
Okay. Well, to quickly change the subject, I have something for you here in the form of a story this time.
Okay.
It was a very brisk gray day in November of 2015 in New York City. The Department of Design and Construction for the city dispatched a crew to dig out a century-old water main near Washington Square Park. It's amazing how many old subterranean water mains and even subway tunnels in New York that are over 100 years old but are still there and nobody uses them. It was about midday when they broke into a hollow space that they were not expecting to be there. They very quickly recognized that they had stumbled upon not one but two burial vaults. Inside, they found an estimated 30 bodies. They quickly notified the city authorities, who determined that the vaults belonged to a couple of different churches from the 1700s. Now, these churches apparently shared a common graveyard burial ground, and it butted up against the city's Potter's Field. So there were a lot of bodies buried there in those days.
But no one thought to, like, take note of that?
Well, no. The thing is, they knew they were there.
Oh, okay.
They had a pretty good idea. They were unable to enter the tombs, so they hired a company called Chrysalis Archaeological Consultants, who used cameras to try to read the nameplates on the 20 coffins that were accessible. But along with those coffins, there were just piles of skulls and skeletal remains simply piled up in the corner of the crypts.
Piles of skulls, sure.
Yeah. Now, they weren't shocked by this because they knew the history of the land where Washington Square Park is currently, well, like it moves around. is currently located.
See, I was confused because the way that you presented this to me was like, oh, what's all this with the skulls and the piles of skulls?
Yeah, I was just trying to hook you into the story.
Oh, okay, I got it.
They knew what was going on. Well, they had a pretty good idea that there was a chance they were going to run into some bodies.
Okay, I got it.
Now, as shocking as this discovery might seem to you,
mm-hmm.
and to me, it wasn't entirely unexpected. This was not the first time that bodies and human remains have been unearthed in Washington Square in flippin' Manhattan.
Oh, my.
The history of the graveyard and the cemetery, the Potter's Field, that dates back to 1797. New York State purchased many acres of farmland. That was farmland at the time for this purpose. If you were poor and you lived in New York, chances are when you died, you ended up here. If you were unidentified and you died in New York, you ended up here. If you were a slave, you were buried there. And these graves were not really very deep. They were pretty shallow graves.
Okay.
And the cemetery quickly became poorly cared for and run down. It was pretty shabby.
Right, because they were poor and black, so who cares,
right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's terrible.
The reason that Washington Square is located where there was once a cemetery.
Yeah, that's a great question.
Yeah, it was a cemetery for nearly 30 years, and yellow fever was sweeping through New York in 1797, 1798, 1801, and 1803. And the city quickly became overrun with corpses. Oof. And this single event was responsible for taking Potter's Field's population from full to well over capacity. Many bodies were just thrown into the vault. They weren't even...
Hence the piles.
The piles, yeah. And many graves had much more than one occupant in them. Some graves, like I had mentioned, we're only 3 feet deep, and they'd been hastily dug to bury these corpses because you can't leave plague victims lying around.
Right.
In addition to it being a potter's field, it also doubled as the public gallows, located right in the center of where the fountain stands today in Washington Square. If you go to Washington Square Park and you sit by the fountain, yeah, they killed a bunch of people there a couple hundred years ago.
I never considered that. I always thought of New York as being, I don't know, outside of that realm of gallowsing.
Yeah, no, they were gallows-ish.
I guess that makes sense.
In those days. In fact, one of the oldest trees in New York City is a giant elm in Washington Square Park. This elm is rumored to have been a hangman's tree in the early days.
Oh, no.
Today known as the Hangman's Elm, it's still thriving. In the northwestern corner of the park, they do think it's probably one of the very oldest trees in New York City. It's rumored that hundreds may have lost their lives dangling from the branches of the hangman's elm. It was a particularly busy time for hangings because, the Revolutionary War. Many lives of inmates and treasonous traitors ended there. Historians estimate a minimum of 20,000 corpses were put to rest beneath the ground of what is now Washington Square Park.
Wow.
So to answer your question, how did the Potter's Field and two church graveyards and a hangman's gallows become a place where people go and picnic?
Not that I'm against a cemetery picnic.
No, we're all for that, actually. In 1826, a guy named Philip Horn was elected mayor of New York City. He immediately began the process of turning the cemetery and the Potter's Field into a public park space. The idea was it would increase property values.
Sure.
In the area.
Yeah. I like a nice fountain over piles of corpses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was economically driven, not a surprise, right?
No.
At the time, the major property that was nearby was New York University. And New York University at that time was greatly in debt. But as soon as the park opened, New York University's went from being in debt to seeing a 240% increase in value over 5 years.
Wow.
It's estimated that 2/3 of Washington Square Park today cover shallow graves of an estimated 20,000 people still under the pavement.
So, wow.
They didn't bother to relocate these remains.
No.
No, they just built the park over it. Consequently, these unexpected exhumations have taken place, and it dates way back. In fact, the very first recorded incident of this was right after the park opened. Again, most of the graves were pretty shallow, maybe 3 feet deep.
Right.
On the parade grounds, the day they opened the park, they had a military parade. Smithsonian Magazine reports in an article that during the military parade, they fired cannons, and the cannons hit the ground and overturned some boulders and revealed, quote, yellow shrouds covering the remains of people who died during yellow fever.
Eek.
And these unplanned exhumations continued from there.
Oh, man.
Fairly regularly, right up until modern times. In 2008, the city announced plans for improvements to Washington Square Park. Of course, city officials at this point were well aware that there were still bodies in the ground.
Is there like a Washington Square Park corpse liaison, like whose job it is to make sure they deal with the Washington Square Park dead?
That'd be a cool job. I don't know exactly what department would handle that, but yes, there's some division in the
Parks and Rec, obviously.
Parks and Rec, yep.
Get Leslie Knope on it.
So as I said, the city officials were well aware that there were still bodies in the ground there, not just a few, like tens of thousands. They were also aware that many of them were very shallow. So they were very careful in drawing up plans on how they would dig in this area. They forbid anybody to dig deeper than 3 feet.
Just, like, we know they're there. Just don't go digging around. The solution is stop it.
However, even though they didn't dig below 3 feet, they still found many graves that were less than 3 feet deep. Oh, the remains were estimated to belong to at least 8 different people.
That's not a grave. That is just land erosion.
Yeah, right.
That's just like eventually the wind blew enough and it covered them up.
Yep. They were buried in a location during its time as Potter's Field. Officials took great care to assure residents that they would be reburied in the park. They
would be reburied in the park?
Yeah, they were going to put them back in the ground and, you know, not... That's what they do.
Oh.
They don't... At this point, they're not moving them. They're just reburying them in the park.
That seems problematic.
They did change their plans, however, on how they were going to proceed with this construction project. And they were able to avoid disturbing further graves during this particular project.
So if you're going to Washington Square Park and you're going to have like a picnic or something, just don't go near like the loose ground.
Right. Don't go near the irrigation canals. You never know what might pop up. But it wasn't long until there was another incident. On the morning of October 23rd, 2009, city workers were updating parts of Washington Square Park and unearthed an entire tombstone from 1799. There's a really cool picture of it. It's about 3 feet tall. It's made out of sandstone. The inscription is still clear. You can clearly read what it says. It says, quote, here lies the body of James Jackson, who departed this life the 22nd day of September 1799, aged 28 years, native of County Kildare, Ireland.
Well, at least there was a tombstone.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so many of them just were just tossed.
Just hucked in. So that indicates to me that probably James was in the church section.
Right.
Not the Potter's Field section. So they looked through the New York census records and they determined that that there was a James Jackson, that he lived in New York. He was listed as a night watchman and or grocer. And archaeological experts believe that he probably was the victim of yellow fever.
Oh, I wonder if he was married.
It's hard to say because they never put, like in his case, James Jackson, husband of.
You know. Huh. I'm sorry, Miss Jackson.
little known fact, women weren't allowed to have first names. So the New York Department of Parks and Rec has placed historical signs in Washington Square Park. And they've been there since the same year that they found those vaults.
Like warnings about corpses?
No, you would think that there would be something about that. But the signs talk about the land's history as a potter's field. Doesn't really say anywhere on the sign that you're walking on dead people, bodies of 20,000 people. The sign says, quote, "This land was once a marsh fed by a local brook, located near an Indian village known as Sapakanakan. In 1797, the city's common council acquired the land for use as a potter's field and for public executions, giving rise to the legend of the Hangman's Elm in the park's northwest corner. Used first as the Washington Military Parade Ground in 1826, the site became a public park in 1827. Following the design, prominent families wanting to escape the disease and congestion of downtown Manhattan, moved to the area and built the distinguished Greek Revival mansions that still line the square's north side. No mention that there's, you know, 20,000 corpses underneath your feet.
So interesting how that piece of land changed its identity over the years and is now like, we're a really nice place to come. Honestly, you'll like it.
So if you're ever visiting New York City or if you live there and you decide to spend an afternoon in Washington Park, keep in mind that you're very possibly walking on the heads of your ancestors.
Unless you're not from there, in which case it would just be some randos.
And in that case, it's fine.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And now, that thing in the middle. The Mycosapuris smithii ant can clone itself. At one point in their evolution, one female ant learned how to duplicate herself. All of the male ants were immediately kicked out of the colony, and they eventually died out. The all-female colony is now self-sustaining. As summer approaches, it's important to remember, always wear sunscreen, stay hydrated, and keep this device in your bag at all times. This is where I'd normally insert a joke, but my 10-minute break just started, so write one yourself. This is The Box of Oddities.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or history of severe allergic reactions, or if you are allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
What does it mean to be Black in America? In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of stories as varied, nuanced, and dynamic as Black experiences, you'll hear it means everything. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.
Since his death in 2009, the world has struggled with how Michael Jackson should be remembered, as the king of pop or as a monster. I'm Leon Nafok, the host of Fiasco and the co-creator of Slow Burn.
And I'm Jay Smooth, a hip-hop journalist and cultural commentator. Michael Jackson was accused of child molestation for the first time in 1993. Our new podcast, Think Twice, Michael Jackson, is the story of what came before and what came after.
Throughout the podcast, we explore what makes Michael Jackson seemingly uncancelable. And we dig into the complicated feelings so many of us have when we hear Billie Jean at the grocery store.
Through dozens of original interviews with people who watched the story unfold firsthand, Think Twice is an attempt to reconcile our conflicted emotions about Michael Jackson, the man, with our deep-seated love of his art.
Listen to Think Twice, Michael Jackson, wherever you get your podcasts, or you can binge the entire series ad-free on Audible or the Amazon Music app.
Join the Freak Show live stream event, April 17th. All the cool freaks will be there. Just go to theboxofoddities.com and click on Live Shows. See you there, you sweet little freak, you.
The Box of Oddities with Kat and Jethro Gilligan Toth.
We got this unsigned message on Facebook from somebody regarding Box 314. Hello, I'm from Norway, and we used to celebrate Children's Day every year. I had mentioned that, you know, we celebrate Mother's Day, Father's Day.
Right.
Why don't we have a child? Mm-hmm. Every day is Children's Day. He said, we celebrated it every year, and it was a big thing. We did weird things like singing songs about other children's skin color and baked foreign types of food like, I don't know, Mexican casserole and garlic bread.
I love that.
It was the 1980s. It was weird times, and Norway was both bland and innocent. I don't have kids and had no idea if anyone else still does this, but apparently they do, and it's actually a UN celebration.
Aww.
You're cool, by the way. Kind regards from Oslo, Norway, home of the dramatic butter crisis of 2011.
Oh, my goodness. Oslo, I cannot wait to visit you.
Thanks.
I cannot wait to visit you.
Thanks, Oslo freak. We have Norwegian freaks.
That's crazy.
It is. I love it. Would you by any chance happen to have a story for me?
I do.
Because I would greatly enjoy that, madam.
Let's talk about snails, baby. Let's talk about snails. Let's talk about snails. Let's talk about
What I'm getting from you is we're going to talk
snails.
About...
snails.
Snails.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. So, okay. Listen, I care about you.
Yeah.
You know, I have your best interest in mind most of the time.
Most of the time.
Yeah. I would say like 98. You know, sometimes comedy trumps it, but
yeah.
I don't want to blow your mind, but I'm about to, so...
Okay. Okay.
Just
my mind is already blown by this buildup.
Prepare your pork taint.
Okay.
Okay. What's the strongest known biological material on Earth? Would you say like titanium?
I would say those eye boogers that Banjo has. Mm. They have an amazing adhesive property.
No, so there's an aquatic snail, and they have teeth that are the strongest known biological material on Earth. Stronger than titanium. Snail teeth.
Snail teeth.
Snail teeth. And some snail species can have over 20,000 teeth.
Oh, that's crazy.
And they're on their tongue.
Oh, no.
That's amazing.
Oh, no,
they're so cool. All right.
This is borderline triggering my trypophobia.
Okay, well, we're not going to keep talking about the teeth on the tongue.
No,
the rows of teeth on the tongue.
I can't stop thinking about it, though.
Okay, well, it's not. We're done. Slugs and snails are mollusks, which puts them in the same category as, like, oysters and clams and mussels. And gastropods, which is the class that snails and slugs live in, are the largest group of mollusks, comprising more than 80% of living mollusk species. There may be as many as 150,000 species of gastropods.
What?
And they can live in almost all habitats.
You said 150,000?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So they're one of the most diverse groups of animals in terms of form, habitat, and behaviors. So let's get into it.
All right.
Let's get into snails.
Kat gets very excited about mollusks.
First, I want to talk about the amazing diversity of snails. So let's start with sea butterflies. They are a suborder of snails, and they don't crawl along the forest floor. They have evolved these flappy lobes on either side of their body that allow them to swim around in the top 80-ish feet of the Arctic and Southern Oceans.
I've developed flappy lobes on both of my sides of the body, but it doesn't help me swim.
So these sea butterflies use their wing-like parapodia to fly, quote-unquote, through the water. And at times they just kind of float along, bobbing along, singing their song.
Mm-hmm.
And they're mostly passive plankton feeders, but at times they can be active feeders.
That's a great insult. I'm gonna remember that next time somebody argues with me about something. I'm going to call them a passive plankton eater. Zip it. Passive plankton eater. What are you, some kind of passive plankton eater?
They also have the ability to create a mucus web that can entangle planktonic food. Many times, the plankton that they will capture is much larger than themselves. But hey, they're captured. So what are you going to do? That snail's going to eat you.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's these cute little sea butterflies, these little flappy snails that live in the water, and they right? Mm-hmm. And then there's the giant African snails, and they are the largest known gastropods. The largest recorded specimen of the giant African snail measured 15.5 inches from snout to tail.
Holy shit. This is like the size of a basketball.
Yeah. And he had a shell length of 10.75 inches. And this was in December of 1978. He was actually a pet. And mm-hmm. that makes perfect sense because he's obviously well fed.
Really big snails when we went ziplining in Puerto Rico.
Yes, they were beautiful.
They were probably the size of a baseball or a softball.
Yeah, they were a sturdy fist.
They were huge.
Yeah, and that's we were waiting for our group to get done ziplining, and I just ran around looking at snails and going, look at this one!
Again, Kat loves a giant mollusk.
I do.
Actually, mollusks of all size.
Of all size. It does not matter. And I was really interested to find that slugs and snails, well, they're the same.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. I mean, snails have shells. That's
okay,
it.
That's the difference.
That's it.
Yeah.
And some slugs have internal shells. So really, I mean, there's no difference.
That grosses me out, too.
What?
I don't know why, because really, we have internal shells.
Yes.
But the eye, I don't know, I think it was the tongue and the teeth thing. It got me really triggered.
You're a little raw right now?
I am.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm feeling a little vulnerable. Need a hug.
Okay.
That's nice. I feel better.
Let's talk about mucus.
Okay. Now you're talking.
So the violet sea snail is also known as the bubble raft snail. And you might say, well, that's a weird name for a snail, until you know that it makes a raft out of bubbles.
Well, then it's a very logical name.
That's right. So it collects bubbles, pulls water in through its foot, and then it makes bubbles, and it mixes it with mucus, and then it uses this bubbly concoction to travel long distances in the ocean. Floating is their only means of transportation. They can't swim, so they just kind of like themselves a raft, and they're on their way.
Wow.
They can be found in warm, tropical, and temperate waters worldwide, but very high concentrations of them occur in subtropical Atlantic, Indian, and Pacific oceans. So they extrude this purple mucus from their foot that quickly hardens on the water, and they just like kind of hop on and make their way.
It's crazy.
It's adorable. And they'll often team up. Ralph the snail teams up with Betty the snail, and they make their own bubble rafts, but then they connect their bubble rafts and they raft together.
Aww.
Because, you know, it's stronger when you've joined rafts and...
Sure.
Yeah. They can often be found floating by the hundreds out in the open ocean. And a really interesting thing about them is that they eat jellyfish. So there's these little tiny sea snails, and they're just making their way through a little jellyfish.
So when they're, you find them by the hundreds, are they all connected?
Oftentimes, yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
No wonder they can take on a jellyfish.
Yeah, they don't mess around. Now, you might say, how does a snail take on something like a jellyfish?
Say, well, Katrina Walls, how does a snail take on something like... Oh, I don't know, a jellyfish.
Well, let me tell you. So there's the cone snail. And the cone snail is the most venomous snail that there is. In fact, he's one of the most venomous creatures on the planet.
Really?
The cone snail is, let's just say he's awesome. And he has a concoction of toxins that he fires via our harpoon-like tooth that is propelled from his body at speeds of up to 400 miles per hour.
Holy shit.
So he's got this tooth.
Yeah.
And he fills it with toxin and he shoots it at you.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. And I'm sure that he doesn't have a great distance that he is capable of shooting it. I mean, how long is his little tooth thing? Can you imagine how fast that's coming at you 8 inches away.
Right. Yeah. Well, the toxins that he shoots out at you target the nervous system, so that paralyzes the victim and allows the snail to snail his way over to them and then start consuming.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The tooth, which is called a radulae, I believe, it grows all the time. So he can just keep refilling his tooth with poison over and over and over again. Haggis, I'm going to need you to settle down. We're talking about snails.
Yeah, settle down, buddy.
Historically, 65% of people stung by the geography cone snail die.
Wow.
Because we don't have any medicine that can neutralize the venom. So basically, some people do live, but you just kind of have to wait it out and kind of go like, well, I guess we'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah, but snails.
I need to make a couple phone calls.
The mango-colored golden elephant snail. He has a bunch of names, but the other one that you might recognize is the rabbit snail. And he has some distinguishing features. So if you see one, you might first be surprised by, one, how mango-colored they are.
Okay.
They're quite bright and beautiful. They're also pretty large. They can measure up to 5 inches. And they have this kind of elephant-like trunk, which, again, bright mango-colored.
Okay.
And hide-looking skin. So, again, very elephant-y. But then they've got these little rabbit ears.
Oh, my.
And they're obviously not rabbit ears, but they look like they're tall, long ears. And they're very popular as pets because they are so flippin' cute. And they get pretty large, so, you know, you can keep track of them.
Plus, they're not toxic.
I don't think they are, no.
I mean, maybe if you ate one, but then again, it wouldn't be your pet.
No.
Yeah.
That would be weird. Anyway, he's super cute, and I'm going to show you a picture of him. Are you ready?
Yeah, I've actually seen a picture of this, but I would love to see it again.
Oh, you have?
Yeah, I've seen them before. I don't remember where. Maybe it was like a National Geographic special or something, but yeah, they're really cute.
Oh, baby, look at the baby.
It does look a little bit like an elephant.
Boo-boo.
Cat will fall in love with any animal.
I love him.
She says that no matter what. There's a crow going through our garbage. I love him.
I do. Look at him making his way. Anyway, so that's a little bit about snails.
That's fascinating.
They are varied and incredible in all their forms.
I would love to see one of those big ones. Those big basketball.
The African snails?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm glad that you said that.
Are you going to show me a picture?
No, I've ordered one.
Oh, want to see one that bad. But okay, yeah, I guess I'll be living in the car. Well, there's Haggis. Has he settled down just in time for us to end our episode?
Yes.
Well done, Haggis. Oh, he's so cute. Honest to God. Haggis, you're cuter than a mollusk. Guys, don't forget that our live stream event on Looped, the Box of Oddities Freak Show, takes place on the 17th of April. Get your tickets now. TheBoxOfOddities.com. Click on the live show link and get your tickets there.
We really hope that you can join us.
Yeah, we don't want to fail.
Right, exactly. That's kind of our motto at this point. Like, yeah. just don't ruin everything. Okay.
And we would love to see you there. And we're looking at, I mean, assuming that people watch this, we're looking at maybe doing a series of these, and it should be a lot of fun. And this one's going to be really weird. We named it the Freak Show on purpose because, well, Freak Show. You're not going to believe some of the crap you're going to see. TheBoxOfOddities.com, the live show link. You can also find the link to buy tickets in the episode notes. We'll see you next time.
Until then, keep flying that freak flag.
Fly it proudly, you beautiful freak.
And so, let it be known that the Box of Oddities belongs to you. And its fate is in your hands. The Box of Oddities commits to the telling of stories. Stories of the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected. We wish to offer our deeply felt gratitude and appreciation for your patronage. TheBoxOfOddities.com. On Facebook at Facebook.com/Box of Oddities Podcast. On Twitter at Box of Oddities and Instagram at Box of Oddities Podcast. Copyright 2021, all rights reserved.